McGraw-Hill Audio presents In Search of Burning Bush, a story of golf, friendship, and the meaning of irons. Written by Michael Koenig, narrated by Lloyd James. Chapter 1. Slowly but surely.
Excuse me, sir. A round of golf is supposed to take 3 hours, not six.
If I understood the shouting of this incensed Scottish fellow correctly, and there's always the outside chance I've completely mistaken his livid burr for an enthusiastically warm welcome, what he means to tell me is that a proper game of golf here in the land where the sport began is supposed to take only 3 hours to play. Not four, not five, and for the love of old Tom Morris, certainly not six.
I'm very sorry, I say, truly very sorry.
Like a guest in a stranger's home, I know two Americans playing golf in Scotland ought to be on their best behavior. Holding up the foursomes behind us hardly qualifies as impeccable manners, particularly since the club we are at, Royal Aberdeen, welcomes only a limited number of non-member visitors. And besides, I myself know the frustration, the growing agony of being stuck behind a group of sod-chunking snails, weaned on the glacial pace of televised professional golf. Most Americans, emulating Tiger Woods and his highly sponsored colleagues, view a round of golf as an all-day affair, best enjoyed at a crawl, as though the participants were coated with some sort of viscous fluid meant to lubricate their knees and elbows. The Scots, on the other hand, view a round of golf as a vigorous walk through the park, or along the sea, or upon the moors, best enjoyed as though the game were indeed a happy form of exercise, not merely an excuse to sit in a motorized cart and drink beer. The Scots leave slowness for their swings. Gesturing with my head toward my companion, Don Nafee, making his way toward the 14th tee, I tell the justifiably angry Scotsman that we're doing our best, but that, well, at a certain point there's only so fast Don can move. The local fellow sighs hotly and harumphs back to his group on the 13th green. Like Casey Martin, I offer weakly. Fairly sprinting to the teeing ground of the 14th, the number one handicap hole, I join Don, who is breathing heavily and perspiring even more so.
What was that all about?
He asked me.
Just a little request that maybe we might pick up the pace a little, I say, as diplomatically as possible.
Don't worry about it. We'll just let him play through.
Sure, Don says. I could use a little rest anyway.
We hit our tee shots. Don lays up with a 3-iron short of the ditch that gives the 14th dike its name. I, foolishly, use my driver, partially in the hope I might fly my golf ball over all the trouble and leave myself a little wedge shot into the hard-as-an-industrial-diamond green. But the real reason for my poor club selection, I realize as we walk down the fairway, is to provide a physical release for the mild embarrassment I feel for holding up play at one of the oldest golf clubs, founded 1780, on the planet. The satisfying crack of titanium meeting Serlin somehow gives me the same kind of cathartic pleasure some patients derive from punching feather pillows in their weekly psychotherapy sessions. Fueled by a growing frustration with my partner's unintentional breaches of etiquette, this will be the third group that has had to play through us today, I swing extra hard. Predictably, my drive flies forever and crooked somewhere over the dike in the left rough. Don, on the other hand, huffing audibly, composes himself long enough to make his usual smooth pass at the ball, a replica of the simple rhythmic motion he makes every time he swings a golf club. 70 yards short of where my wayward pellet has come to rest, Don plunks his tee shot into the short grass. Trying vainly to banish thoughts of the tortoise and the hare metaphors from my mind, I march off into the high weeds. I wave on the group behind us. While the charging foursome of Scotsmen play their tee shots, I stand in the rough, looking backward toward the tee. Don, I notice, with some chagrin, is lying down on the right side of the fairway, apparently staring at the flinty blue sky. Since each member of the quartet on the tee seems to have also selected a driver, he's probably not in any imminent danger of getting dinged